Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast, around the world on American Forces Radio. And we're now very happy to be joined by Steve Currier. His book is called The California Golden Seals, A Tale of White Skates, Red Ink, and One of the NHL's Most Outlandish Teams. It's available from the University of Nebraska Press. And I'm really happy that you wrote this book. This was my boyhood team, and I'm not going to lie and say I was a huge hockey fan, but my dad would take my brothers and I every once in a while, and my greatest memory of the Seals was that John Madden was sitting in our row. Other than that, I don't have a lot of memories. What was it about the Seals that captured your imagination, Steve?
It's kind of a long story. I'll try and cut it as short as I can, though. See, I was born about a year after the Barons folded. So I was born in 79, and I never actually got to see the Seals play. But as a kid, I would constantly see in different sort of in sticker books and other hockey books, just little mentions, like a sentence here, a sentence there about the California Seals. And there wasn't really a lot of detail about them, but it just got me very curious. And when I was about 11 years old or so, I naively wrote to the NHL asking for, you know, just a series of records on not just the Seals, but every other defunct team that ever existed. And they sent me this media guide from one of their last seasons. They just photocopied the whole thing and sent it back to me. As I write in the book, it's probably the greatest piece of mail I've ever received, because I studied that thing from cover to cover throughout most of my 7th grade and 8th grade. And I think it just, that's how I kind of got connected with the Seals, was just, I guess you can call it fate, that someone at the league offices would send me that media guide. And it could have gone either way. If someone had sent me the media guide for, say, the Kansas City Scouts, I might have been writing a book about them instead of the Seals.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned the Barons. When they moved, they became the Barons there briefly. But I like how you say that they're the train wreck on ice, the Seals, how not to run a team, throwing away draft picks. Was it, and I know Charlie Finley wasn't there the whole time, but why was it a team that just, you know, was not like the Canadiens? They weren't going to take it seriously.
I think there's a lot of reasons why the Seals kind of failed. There's like the draft picks is one for sure, that I think a lot of the early expansion teams, the Seals included, tended to not really take the draft as seriously as it has become since then, and they just kind of traded those picks away, thinking that, well, if we trade a first-round pick for another first-round pick, it'll even out in the end. But it didn't quite work out that way, and when the Seals did have first-round picks, they just didn't scout the players very well, and there were many good players that were available, but they never seemed to get the right pick. So that was one of the reasons why I think they definitely didn't work very well at the time, and why they failed in the Bay Area. But there's also, you look at Charlie Finley and the fact that when it came time to pay his players a little bit more, when the World Hockey Association came in and started threatening the NHL and stealing players, Finley would often offer a $500 or $1,000 raise when the WHA was practically doubling contracts. And so the players who were getting sick of wearing white skates and were sick of Finley's chintzy behavior, they just decided, well, we're going to go to the World Hockey Association. They're offering us better deals. They're treating us better. They're treating us like human beings. And that's another one of the reasons why the team failed. Once that that 72 season came around, it was really difficult for them to turn things around. There just wasn't a lot of time, and attendance was failing. And by the time they did start getting it turned around in the last year or two, it was really too late.
Yeah, and there was, when the Sharks came in 91, a lot of people said, hey, you know, the Seals couldn't survive, and you're going to start off in the Cow Palace, which no one wants to go to. Then you're going to go to San Jose. You're not even going to be in Oakland and San Francisco. A lot of people were kind of naysayers to it, and we know the Sharks have very much flourished. I'm a huge Sharks fan, and just wanted to ask you, did you go to the Seals reunion at the Tank last year?
No, I didn't, actually. I'm out in Ottawa, Ontario, mm-hmm. So I'm pretty far away, which makes it even stranger that I'd be writing a book about the Seals. I think I'm the only member of the Booster Club that's actually in Canada. I heard about it. I definitely saw highlights of it on TV. And Mark Brechmill, who did a documentary on the SEALs earlier this year, I saw many of his clips that were on YouTube and some of the articles are written about it. But no, I didn't have a chance to attend myself.
We're speaking with Steve Currier. He's written a book, The California Golden Seals, available by the University of Nebraska Press. He's up in Ottawa. And, you know, the Charlie Finley, of course, owner of the Oakland A's with the white spikes. That's why he wanted the white skates and bringing in live seals, which PETA wouldn't go for these days. And also a guy that started the wave at an A's-Yankees game back in 81, a San Jose State guy, a guy that I've had on this show many, many times, met him in person a lot, Crazy George Henderson. And I'm sure Crazy George was a part of this tome, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's mentioned near the back and also in the one of the earlier chapters as well, because he had a bit of a role in the streaking incident that happened in 74. anyone who was there remembers that very clearly what happened. There was a young lady who, between periods, just decided that she was going to strip down and head onto the ice and just streak across the ice. And Crazy George was supposed to take a picture of her on the way out, but I think he must have fumbled the camera or something, or maybe he took a few pictures, but they didn't come out very well. And he says that he was no one's too impressed with his picture-taking skills. It turns out that the streaking incident, just on a side note, was it seems like it was more of a plan by the team to generate some publicity. It wasn't just spontaneous. The SEALs actually had paid this lady to streak across the ice and get some publicity. And it did give them a bit of publicity, but nothing that really sustained them long term.
Hockey has so many great characters over the years, and I think about the Sharks and, you know, I think about even their coaches with Norman Budd, and just the guy going by Bud. Who are some of maybe the your favorite characters associated with the SEALs?
Oh, I think my favorite has to be Gary Simmons, the goaltender. Mm. I spoke to him. I must have spoken to him for almost an hour and a half on the phone, I think, because he had so many great stories to tell. And other players, too, they always said that, you know, he's the guy you got to talk to. He's got so many great things to say. And he was the kind of guy who, you know, he had it put in his contract that he wouldn't ever have to wear neckties when the team was on the road. He just decided when he was going to sign up the SEALs that that's my condition. If I wear neckties, I'm going to walk. And so they put in his contract, he never had to wear neckties anywhere on the road. He always liked to wear cowboy hats and cowboy boots on the road, so he stood out a little bit, but he was a bit of a character, and but a lot of fun to talk to. And even guys like Joe Starkey, the broadcaster,
yeah,
would often say that if ever there was going to be a slow night, like I think he said the night the Warriors won the NBA championship in 76, I think it was, he knew he was going to be getting any calls whatsoever. So he just called in Gary Simmons and said, "Why don't you come on and sit in with me?" And they just talked for an hour and a half, 2 hours, because he knew that this is the kind of guy who you could have a conversation over the phone with him and just talk about anything, and it's always going to be entertaining.
Yeah, very close, 75, by the way. And Joe Starkey, known for the play, calling the game for Cal Stanford back in 1982. We're speaking with Steve Currier. You know, it's interesting, from when I used to work for Sports Channel in 1990 and on up, and that was the only place to see the Stanley Cup Finals. And then, of course, the lockout, and then ESPN was getting better ratings for blackjack and poker, so they wouldn't even take them back, and they had to go to the Outdoor Life Network. And Gary Bettman's new NHL revolution, it seemed like it took a while to get going again. And then the mass expansion going to Florida and Carolina and Arizona, it just seemed like it was maybe oversaturated. That's why I'm glad to see the Jets are back in Winnipeg. What did you think about that? Because, you know, we had no Canadian teams in the playoffs recently.
Yeah, it was great news when we heard the Jets were coming back. I mean, not that I'm necessarily a Jets fan either, but I think in Canada, like you were saying, there were no playoff, no teams in the playoffs a few years ago. And you could really feel the sting here in Canada. The ratings were down across the board for hockey. And when one Canadian team moves, it feels like we lose a piece of our identity. But when we get one back, like what happened with Winnipeg, it seemed like there was a bit of a celebration across the country. And it really doesn't matter which Canadian team is in the playoffs. If there's one that's left standing in the second or third round, the entire country just rallies behind this team because, as you know, we're outnumbered in teams. There's only, I think, seven or eight of us now in Canada, and the rest are in the States. So whenever we do get a team that's in the playoffs, and we don't get a lot usually, we tend to stick by them and support them, even if it's your worst rival. You'll see Oilers fans supporting the Flames just because it's important that we get the cup one day.
And, geez, Ottawa off to a really nice start, and I'm going to assume that's your team, the Sens?
No, actually, well, I do support the Sens when if they're like last year in the playoffs against Pittsburgh, definitely I was fully supportive of Ottawa, but mm-hmm. I'm actually a Montreal Canadiens fan, mm-hmm. so it's I'll pull for Ottawa, but only if they're not playing Montreal.
I just got to see the Canadiens the other day down at the Shark Tank, by the way, and it did not go well. Actually, the Canadiens off to a pretty bad start right now, though, overall.
It's been pretty horrible, I got to say. It's last few games have been much better, but it's been a pretty horrible start. But, you know, as we saw the last couple of years, they got off to a great start. They were 11-1 or 12-1, and then they ended up failing miserably afterwards. So maybe a lousy start is what they actually need to kind of reverse the trend a little.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say you're going to be at the Canada Tire Center tonight.
No, actually, I'm going to be watching my 2-year-old son tonight, actually.
Okay, because the Habs are at the Sens. We have been speaking with Steve Currier. The book, The California Golden Seals, A Tale of White Skates, Red Ink, and One of the NHL's Most Outlandish Teams, from University of Nebraska Press. It is a big book, a lot of research put in. And I appreciate the effort, especially 3,000 miles away, to do something like this, because the Seals get forgotten, and you got to be my age. I'm 52 to barely remember going to those games. So thanks for your effort, and hopefully we'll catch up, talk a little hockey down the road.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure to be here.
All right, great stuff. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll come on back on Tittle Lightning Sports.